Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Alec Torres of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And Alec, both the good and the bad deal with the ongoing situation centering on Ukraine, our relationship with Russia, and all sorts of other things. The good martini comes from RT. That is the Russian television network. They've got a lot of American presence on there. Now they've got anchors. They, of course, have Larry King doing whatever he does for them. And just the other night, an anchor resigned from RT because she simply disagreed with the idea of Crimea going to the Russians. Liz Wall is another anchor at RT, and as you'll soon find out, was until very recently an anchor at RT. She pointed out last night on air that she is the granddaughter of refugees from the Soviets crushing the Hungarian uprising of 1956. And then she also went on to talk about how other aspects of her family led her to leave the network.
I'm the daughter of a veteran. My partner is a physician at a military base where he sees every day the firsthand accounts of the ultimate prices that people pay for this country. And that is why, personally, I cannot be part of a network funded by the Russian government that whitewashes the actions of Putin. I'm proud to be an American and believe in disseminating the truth. And that is why, after this newscast, I'm resigning.
So, Alec, I guess it's probably a good thing for Liz that she's here and not in Moscow, or else she might end up with a little polonium in her food. But to see this kind of rebuke towards Vladimir Putin on something he funds is kind of nice to see.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I never really thought that we'd see a good martini coming out of RT, but, you know, I'll accept it from any corner. You look at the Russian media here, and it really is astounding how it's twisting every single thing that's going on in Crimea. And RT is just one branch of that. But you have networks all over the place that won't acknowledge Russian troops are there, kind of calling it a spontaneous uprising and reforming of government. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous when you look at it from an American perspective with free press, but this is just a play in the game for Russia. But seeing it from RT, seeing an anchor on air doing it where Russia could not cut it out live, that's great to see.
As we've seen, and as you mentioned, propaganda coming from the Russian media, including old footage of the uprising in the streets of Kiev. Right now, it's pretty calm. Everybody's gone back to their work, hoping to see this new government succeed. But over in Moscow, they're still showing Molotov cocktail throwers like it's today's news. And so people in Russia and in Russian parts of Ukraine, perhaps, are seeing things that are being branded in ways that are not accurate whatsoever. So very interesting. And speaking of that, we switch to our bad martini now, and it looks like Crimea probably will go over to Russia without a fight. The Crimean parliament has approved the idea of joining Russia. They'll put a referendum to the Crimean people. I think it's March 16th. And given the breakdown in that part of Ukraine, I don't think it's going to be too much of a nail biter as to where they go. So it looks like the way this has been orchestrated, Alec, is that Ukraine loses Crimea almost without firing a shot.
Putin played this really well. He didn't invade farther than he wanted. He just wanted Crimea, and Crimea was pro-Russian, which he knew. So we're in a bad situation as far as our diplomacy goes, because we have certain standards of national sovereignty, but also we have national standards or international standards of being able to vote and vote for what country you want to be a part of. Seeing as Crimea is a separate region from Ukraine in this peninsula, and they are pro-Russian, there's little we can do on the side of legitimacy to say that, well, hey, you know, people voting for what country they want to be a part of or for what union they want to join is illegitimate when they obviously do want to vote that way.
Do you think that's where it ends, though? Because if you look at the map, there is, of course, a little bit of water at the north part of the Black Sea that kind of separates existing Russia from Crimea. There's a plausible case here, if Putin keeps peddling his propaganda, that he could make for the Russian-speaking people of eastern Ukraine to be added to the fold as well. Do you think he's really going to stop with Crimea?
I personally don't think that he will, but, you know, again, I don't have all the information and I'm no diplomatic expert. But I think Putin knows well enough that not to bite off more than he can chew, not to push the West and the international community to have to act. Right now, there's a very tepid response. Europe doesn't want to impose any sanctions really at all. Obviously, the U.S. doesn't want to get involved militarily in any fashion. So I think Putin's smart to just consolidate his gains here. I know Charles Krauthammer said this last night. There's really nothing we can do but assure our NATO allies at this point, hey, we're not going to let them cross your borders, even if they've crossed Ukraine's.
Do you think that we're suddenly going to find common ground with the Russians on March 17th after the Crimeans have already voted and all of a sudden we've got common ground that will go no further?
The only common ground will come when Putin decides to stop running and stop going over borders. And that'll only come when he decides not to. You know, far be it from me to say when the Russians will decide to stop, but I don't see common ground. I simply see Putin acknowledging his limits for the time being.
That's probably a good way to put it. All right. There's not much of a connection, you would think, between what's going on in Ukraine and the back and forth between our foreign policy team and the Russians in connection with the IRS hearings. But, oh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is here to clear that up, because if you didn't see this story yesterday, there was another set of hearings before the House Government and Oversight Committee. Lois Lerner, the woman who pled the Fifth a number of months ago, was back for supposed testimony. She took the Fifth again, so she didn't answer any questions. After trying to ask a few, Daryl Issa adjourned the hearing. The ranking member of that committee, Elijah Cummings of Maryland, wanted to make a statement, and here's kind of how that went down.
Ladies and gentlemen, seeking the truth is the obligation of this committee. I can see no point in going further. I have no expectation that Ms. Lerner will cooperate with this committee, and therefore we
stand adjourned. Chairman, I have a statement. I have a procedural question, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a procedural question. Mr. Chairman, you cannot run a committee like this. You just cannot do this. This is, we're better than that as a country. We're better than that as a committee.
And then so Cummings got a little more outraged as ISA refused to reconvene the hearing. Over on MSNBC, they were far more concerned about that aspect of the hearing than Lois Lerner refusing to answer key questions about the IRS treatment of conservative groups. And here's Florida Congresswoman and Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz trying to compare what just happened in that clip to what we're seeing in international hotspots.
In the last couple of weeks in which we have been on both sides of the aisle, standing up for the rights of the oppressed, trying to make sure that in Venezuela, that dictators there aren't shutting down the opposition, the same thing in the Ukraine. At the same time, you have a chairman of the Government Oversight Committee literally electronically cutting off the mic of the opposition to prevent him from having any say or participation in a hearing that was focused on an investigation that has been resolved.
Now, Alec, tactically speaking, it was probably not the smartest move by ISA to do what he did, because whatever Cummings was going to say would not have gotten as much attention as the spat over whether to let him talk at all played out. But to suggest that Elijah Cummings, who could walk 20 feet and have a whole gaggle of television cameras in his face and say what he wants to say, is the same as Venezuela and what is happening in Ukraine is just a tad of a stretch.
It's patently absurd. It's more than a tad of a stretch in my mind. That's trying to make this sort of moral equivalency of dictators and Representative Issa. I think everyone has to admit that Issa didn't play this right. The meeting was adjourned. I'm not sure of the technicalities of how these committees run, but I'm sure Cummings also had a chance to speak before that. You can duke it out in the press afterwards if each of the representatives want to air their grievances. But that's exactly the point. Issa has no control over what the media, he has no control over Cummings going out and saying really whatever he wants subsequent to that event. I just can't imagine why Schultz would make this statement. It's unbelievable.
She's been in the crazy martini a lot over the past couple of years, so this is not exactly new ground for her. I don't know if she's trying to help her party get the high ground on these particular issues, since the Republicans have been so critical of Obama's handling of the Ukraine and his virtual ignoring of what's happening in Venezuela. Do you think that's got something to do with it?
I'm just happy, actually, that Schultz recognizes that Venezuela is a dictatorship. You see the left all the time kind of fudging on who's good and who's bad. You've seen it with Cuba over and over again, not particularly with Schultz, but just those on the left. So I don't know what to call it, though.
I guess maybe they just don't like Maduro as much as they liked Hugo Chavez, because he hated George W. Bush. So, you know. Alec, good to have you with us today. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me back.
Alec Torres of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.